I'm not looking at the video here, and I probably won't be. So, you know, no hand signals, because I won't.
You have my verbal affirmation that that is okay.
Okay, that's great.
Are your school days out of sight when you took English, art, and math? What's your favorite Fahrenheit? How sour are the grapes of wrath? Do you need a challenger or disgusting Salinger? Do you love the written word? What happened to the mockingbird? Our show is just beginning, so find a place to sit. These questions will be on the test. It's time for Sophomore Lit.
Welcome back to another one of these crazy Thanksgiving episodes of Sophomore Lit. I'm John McCoy. And with me, as in Thanksgivings before, are my brothers, Rob and Dan. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Now, my brothers probably never would have ascended to this back in the day when we did the first one of these things if they knew that they would be on the hook for all these years. But...
should have read the contract.
But to bring you up to speed, every Thanksgiving we have tried to address a bit of Americana here on Sophomore Lit, something that might be a little less literary but a little more folksy, charmy. And you know, in the past we've done poems by Longfellow, we did Casey at the Bat, we did what else have we done? We did Burma Shave Signs. Mm-hmm. And this time we are turning our jaundice eyes towards Poor Richard's Almanac, published by Benjamin Franklin between the years of 1732 and 1758. The first one was dated for 1733 but published in 1732. So guys, what do you think of when I say, Ben Franklin?
Kites. I think of how everyone likes to talk about how he had a lot more sex and was a randier fellow than,
yes.
Yeah.
He's sort of like the nation's drunk, rich uncle who, always sleeping around.
Yeah, he seems like he was the fun founding father, the one who never had to bother with being president.
Right, right. Well, in the words of the Firesign Theater, the only president of the United States who was never president of the United States. Yeah, Ben Franklin, born here in Boston on Milk Street, and because of that, you know, we're very proud of him here in Boston, although he, you know, he wised up and left here pretty early on for sunnier skies and traveled down to Philadelphia, where he spent most of his life doing stuff until he eventually became an ambassador to France.
Yeah, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, and you know, to this day, if you go downtown to Boston, and you there's a burying ground near the Boston Common, which you can, by the way, you can still graze livestock in the Boston Common. That's legal.
Me?
You personally can bring your cow.
Livestock, but
do you have to have a Bostonian?
But next to there, there's a burying ground that has this huge obelisk that's marked Franklin. And this is not where Ben Franklin is buried. This is where his parents are buried. But I think it's a bait and switch for all the tourists walking along the Freedom Trail. You don't seem very impressed by my fun facts about American history.
I mean, I could talk about obelisks for a while. I don't know.
I wandered some of those cemeteries, but I don't remember it. But okay, yes, I believe you.
Yeah, just look up Franklin Monument Boston or whatever and you'll find it. So
if you have the time, if you
wanna. because I know you have nothing better to do with your time. So Ben Franklin, printer, started his almanac and it ran for many, many years. It was one of the most successful pamphlet publications in America with print runs of 10,000.
Mm.
Wow.
And the publishing industry has returned to that today.
Yeah. You know, today Ben would probably be writing young adult novels, I guess. So these, you know, today we remember a few choice sayings from these almanacs. I thought it would be fun to take a deeper dive into what exactly these almanacs were. I thought it would be fun.
I have to admit, I think Robert was the good scholar and really dug into it, and I skimmed a lot of it, and I was like, I get the idea.
Towards the end.
Because,
well, he does repeat some of these aphorisms from year to year.
Yeah.
And he also contradicts himself from aphorism to aphorism.
Well, reading a bunch of them one after the other, I mean, like, this resembles to me nothing more than a Twitter feed, which, you know, with a similar value to some of the individual, let's call them tweets, and, you know, with the same pleasure that you would get from reading a bunch of them back to back.
Yeah, to talk about what I had my poor brothers read, you can't actually find an edition of Poor Richard's Almanac per se online easily. What there's one of these Project Gutenbergs that collected all the introductions and all the pages of sayings from the almanacs, but that leaves out whatever was in the calendars themselves and marginalia in the calendar sections, which made up most of the book. But, you know, thank goodness, because looking at this right now, it says it's 16,000 words.
A little longer than the Burma Shade side.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I wanted to say a few words about aphorisms, because I suppose that there are a few in my life that I have found, you know, genuinely helpful. But for the most part, like, these are the sorts of things that are presented to you as wisdom that you should pay attention to. And reading a bunch of them back to back, as I said, sort of like devalued them in a way that I found actually kind of comforting and instructive, where I'm like, well, a lot of these are nonsense. And I think when I was growing up, you know, Poor Richard's sayings were presented to me as these great pearls, in the sense that, like, we here in America love to canonize the founding fathers and think that they're brilliant all the time, and some of these things are just dumb.
Yeah. Well, I think the best you can say about the aphorism is that they are clever, and clever quickly grates in repetition or in bulk.
Yeah, but, you know, I had a kind of a different experience, which was, this is the first time I actually read through any of these introductions that he did in the voice of Richard Saunders. The conceit, if you never were in third grade in the United States, the conceit of Poor Richard's Almanac is that these were almanacs put together by this guy named Richard Saunders, who all we know about him is he's poor, he seems to have bad relationships with his wife, and he isn't really qualified to be giving anyone any advice. And when you look at it through that lens, it starts to become a little bit more ironic and a little bit more clever, the aphorisms, because, like I said, there are things that, like, completely contradict each other. Like, there's one aphorism he has that says the miser's cheese is the wholesomest, and then and then later he says, like, a few years down the line, he says, wish a miser long life and you'll wish him no good. And I'm like, you know, what is it?
Well, I'm not even quite sure what either of those things are supposed to mean, honestly. Like, what makes the miser's cheese the wholesomest? Can you expand
there
on that?
There are inscrutable ones.
But yeah, I guess I do appreciate that this is basically an extended bit that is being done, where it's all a character play kind of.
Yeah, he commits to the bit. You know, the thing, one of the things that I was very charmed to find is that he comes out of the gate swinging in his 1733, talking about Titan Leeds, who was the other major publisher of almanacs at the time, and he predicts Titan Leeds' death. And what's funny about this is that Leeds apparently really played up astrology and prediction in his almanac and claimed to be a true soothsayer. And Franklin has a lot of fun with the whole idea of astrology and whether there's any good information at all in these almanacs.
Yeah, that was the funniest part, the Titan Leeds, and also how you could predict the weather through astrology by, you know, Sid Virgo was up in there taking a tinkle in the sky, then you know that rain was coming.
Yeah.
But he commits to it. And the thing is that there's like bits later on where people are saying, like, people say I don't exist, but yes, I do. Like you know, I have reasons for keeping my location a secret. By the end, though, I think he gets a little maudlin. There's like a poem late in the series where he says, like, mm-hmm. Who is poor Richard? I'm like, I feel like at that point, Franklin is sort of drinking his own Kool-Aid. and at the very end, the last one in 1747, it reads, I don't know if he was planning for this to be the last one or not, but it really reads like someone saying goodbye, because he's saying, like, you know, I tried to tell some jokes, and, you know, if my advice was bad, so what? You know, at least I made you laugh. And I tried to write some poetry, and of course I'm a bad poet. It really does feel like this guy, like, signing off for the last time.
I mean, it must be incredibly tiring to keep up this thing. Sorry, I got distracted scrolling through and looking at some of the more inscrutable ones, like, never praise your cider, horse, or bedfellow. I'm not quite sure why one shouldn't do that. And then there's some that are just like questions that aren't answered. Why does the blind man's wife paint herself? I don't know. Poor Richard, why? Was there a punchline? Were you waiting for me to tee you up?
It has all these like folksy, it's like all this folksy charm. And then he does, he keeps quoting Latin orators, and he does quotes in French and Spanish and German and a bunch in Welsh.
That's really surprised me. I didn't expect anyone to know Welsh in the colonies, but okay.
Here is one that is a question that has Maids of America, who gave you bad teeth? And then they have answer, hot soupings and frozen apples. So
he's coming on hard on those frozen apples.
That's when I read out loud to Missy to give her a warning.
Stop serving me.
To be fair, if one did eat frozen apples, you'd expect their teeth to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
But also the hot soupings.
Hot soupings. That sounds dirty somehow.
Well, the really one that sounds dirty is love well, whip well.
Well, also, yeah. Marry your daughter and eat fresh fish betimes. I have my suspicions about what that means, and they disturb me.
There is a kind of a weird misogyny that goes through a lot of these. He tends to write off all women as being promiscuous in some way or another. There's a lot of stuff about painting your face and lending your tail.
Mm-hmm.
He makes that joke, I don't know, maybe six times in the course of this this run.
Yeah.
In one form or another.
Well, that's understandable, but why all the hate towards lawyers?
Because lawyers.
Depends on what they do. I'll give Robert that. Yeah, there's a lot about only employing homely maids and such.
You can break down most of these into sayings about austerity and being careful with money, sayings about being in charge of your appetites, and praise of hard work.
Yeah.
You know, Franklin didn't necessarily live by these things, particularly as far as appetite goes. He was, by the end of his life, he suffered from gout. He ate a lot. And he certainly did sleep around a lot. And he also wrote, you know, famously his little pamphlet on why you should have affairs with older women. So there's that.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of aphorisms in here about how hard it is to know yourself, to be fair to him. So so he may not have had this self-recognition, or maybe he did.
And multiple about preserving your teeth. Did he have bad teeth? I know Washington.
Teeth were a concern. Yes, teeth were a concern.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's some interesting stuff you can find here. Like one year he teaches you how to make wine from wild grapes, which I assume are Concord grapes, which would produce a pretty nasty wine. He also has a long discourse on how to discern what kind of diet is right for yourself. It's like a two-part discourse that he does, and a lot of it comes down to, if you study a lot, don't eat a lot of meat.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think there are many of these that would appropriately be responded to with that meme of the person being like, I guess, or whatever.
I thought it was actually a little bit more useful, or surprisingly, for the time period. Maybe I'm just not giving the time period enough credit, but it was a lot of just listen to your body kind of things as to whether you've eaten enough or had enough.
We have our own ideas of what makes good food. I remember I had an American history class that started in the turn of the century, and at the turn of the century, around 1900, the idea about food was that you had to match foods with the same color, and that would give you a good, well-rounded meal. So you had all your greens in one meal, and all your grays in one meal, and all your browns in one meal.
Oh, dear.
Does make it an appetizing plate.
Yeah, and also, I don't know. I mean, like, I try to eat healthier, but to have all my greens in one meal doesn't sound fun.
Yeah. There's one aphorism here. At 20 years of age, the will reigns. At 30, the wit. At 40, the judgment. I get what he's saying here, but I find the older I am, the more childish I get. At least the more I just want to sit around and play my Switch all day.
Yeah. I mean, that... I don't know, John. That sounds sort of... like depression. I don't want
to. is this an intervention? Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't. I also don't agree with. I mean, like, I don't know that the will reigned when I was younger anymore. Now, and my judgment, I feel like, has gotten less as I've grown older. At least in the terms, it depends on how you mean judgment. I am less judgmental. I may have better judgment about myself, however.
I think people age faster in the 1700s, so maybe in 20 years, the judgment will start to reign.
So what is the... You've mentioned your most puzzling aphorisms. Do you have any more? I have one that I sat and tried to figure out what the hell he was meaning for the longest time. This is one of these things where he suddenly becomes erudite for no reason. Dull learning... Propria quae maribus, without book, like nomen crescentius genitivio doth look.
I think I see your problem, John. That's in Latin.
Well, as far as I could tell, this was making a joke about declensions or cases. Sorry, cases in Latin, and God help me.
Always the funniest.
Yeah, I love an esoteric joke, but that may go too far.
any other favorite aphorisms in the middle of here, or anything else you want to add?
I kind of want to just start tweeting some of these without explanation and see what happens.
Oh, you know that there's some joke Twitter somewhere with somebody doing this already.
Yeah. I'm sorry that we don't have just like a full one to look through so I could see what the, I don't know, what the planting advice was for that year or whatever.
You should tweet this for a while and then just explain that the ghost of Richard Saunders went up your nostril.
I think there is actually somewhere like a scholarly website that has an annotated version of all this, but I don't know if they have the calendars there too. The idea of almanacs is kind of weird to me. When Rob and I were young, they still sold the old farmer's almanac in all the grocery stores.
And Dad would get it.
Still do around
Dad
here.
Dad would get it every year. I'm not quite clear on what he was doing with it, but it would be around the house. I don't know whether he was following the planting advice or what.
Well, you know, the older I get, the more I understand our father as being willfully eccentric. You know? I think there was something about the modern world that didn't sit well with him.
I got it. I mean, I got both what he was doing and maybe, but I got the old farmer's almanac a few years just because I had this feeling like it'd be somehow more connected to the seasons and the times or folk wisdom or something. And, you know, I'd look at it for a while. It was mildly amusing and, you know, never follow it as an almanac. But
now, do you think it's willful eccentricity? Because I would argue that we're all eccentric as well in our own ways and perhaps obsessed with strange things that are out of step with the modern world.
Well,
men and melons are hard to know.
That's true.
Well, maybe we're cultivating that that drunk, jocular uncle persona that Franklin did so well.
Mm-hmm. And as he said, visit your aunt, but not every day, and call it your brothers, but not every night. So, again, a little obtuse for me, but
any final words about this almanac, or about Ben Franklin, or about Thanksgiving?
I do recommend that the listeners look it up and scroll through some, and not read them all, but pause on a few and, you know, in perplexity, think about them.
Yeah. Oh, Dan, here's one for you. Mm. There are no fools so troublesome as those that have wit.
It's true. I've known a lot of troublesome comedians in my time.
I guess, you know, it was good advice that although he made a lot of fun of lawyers, he told you to tell the truth to your lawyer and your doctor, which I approve of.
It's the only way they can help.
Hey.
Thanks again to my brothers, Rob and Dan. Dan has an obscure podcast called The Flophouse. Sophomore Lit is brought to you by The Incomparable Network. Find more funny, smart podcasts online at theincomparable.com. Write the show at sophomore.literature@gmail.com or join the discussion on either the Facebook page or the Incomparable Membership Discord. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Okay, I think we'll stop here. I think that's enough.
Okay, thank you.
Enough on poor Richard. Yeah, I've made you suffer enough.